This episode of Sick contains adult language, deals with sexual themes, and includes discussion of rape. Just keep that in mind if you have kids around.
When I was 24, I had Todd, and then 2 years later, I had Carrie. I actually gave him a hug after I found out I was pregnant with Todd. And then when I had Carrie, he came by the hospital and peeked in, heard you had a baby girl, and I shook his hand and said, thank you so much. We got our boy and our girl. You are a blessing. That's what I said.
This is Debbie Inman. Decades ago, Dr. Donald Klein secretly used his own sperm to impregnate her. Klein told her she got a medical resonance sperm. Debbie and her husband never told their children they were donor conceived, even after they got divorced. But in early 2019, their son, Todd Foster, found out when he got the results of a DNA test. You heard Todd in the last episode.
I called my mom, and she answered. And this is like at 10:30 at night. And on a school night. And mom, hey, I got my DNA results back. And stop right there, Todd. You got to come to me now. Wait a minute, what? No, you got to come to me now.
They talked for hours. Debbie confirmed that Todd was donor conceived, and she learned for the first time about Klein's role in it. Debbie and Todd then had to tell Todd's dad. Gary Foster knew only one side of the story, that he wasn't Todd's biological father.
He called me and he says, Dad, I need to talk to you. I said, okay. They come over, and when he came over, he had his mom with him. Something's up here. I wonder what the hell's going on, you know? And he says, I thought I'd tell you I had a DNA test done. I said, well, then you know then, don't you?
They filled him in about Klein. Father, mother, and son now knew the truth. There was one last person to tell, Todd's younger sister, Carrie.
Carrie needs to know. We're not telling her on the phone. She needs to come up here. I don't care how you guys do it. Get her up here. We have to tell her.
She's super close with my father, and she's definitely his favorite.
She's always been my baby, yeah.
This was going to hit her hard.
Carrie Foster, now Carrie Nungester, lives in Georgia. The family asked her to fly back home to Indiana. She thought the trip was just to spend time with her parents. She went out to dinner with her dad one night. When they got back to his house, he told her, your mom and brother are on their way. We need to talk.
She thought I was sick or something bad. So I got her in the house and set her down. She was getting really upset. I said, wait till your brother gets here. We'll talk about it. No, Dad, I can't handle it. She was crying. She says, it's killing me.
As soon as my mom and I walked in and Carrie saw me with mom, like, I knew she knew, like, something was way up. And I just kind of sat back, kind of into the corner of the room and just kind of let them go through it. And then eventually when they wanted to pull me into the conversation, they did.
He said, our dad is not our dad. And I lost it.
This is Carrie.
My dad has always been my rock, the for sure thing that I knew about myself and my life. That's my dad. I feel like I was lost, like I didn't really know who I was. And then he said the words, that's not all I need to tell you. Like, what else can you possibly tell me?
This is Sick, a podcast about what goes wrong in the places meant to keep us healthy. I'm Jake Harper.
And I'm Lauren Bavis. This is the final episode of our first season, an investigation into fertility treatment and one Indiana doctor's abuse of power.
This is our last episode, but for the families involved, this story will never end.
after we spent several hours sitting there and my parents kept apologizing, I'm like, it's not your fault. You didn't do anything wrong. And so I left my dad's house, went back to my mom's, grabbed me a beer out of her fridge, and I sat there at the table and cried the entire night, just crying.
That was in February of 2019. A DNA test later confirmed what they suspected, that Carrie is also a biological child of Donald Klein. She and Todd are full-blooded siblings. If what Klein told investigators is true, he would have drawn a star on Debbie's chart, so he knew to use his own sperm again for her second pregnancy.
Jake and I had the same thought when we met Carrie. Carrie has the same light blue eyes, the same nose as Jacoba Ballard, another Klein sibling you've heard on this podcast. They look like sisters.
I've heard that a lot, yeah.
Carrie says she resembles many of her half-siblings, which is hard for her. Her whole life, Carrie had a very different idea of where her physical traits came from.
I mean, you can't tell now because my hair is colored, but I have lighter brown hair with a little bit of red in it. So I've gone 36 years thinking, oh, this red in my hair I got from my grandmother, my dad's mom. And then to find out, like, all that being taken from you, I feel robbed. I feel like he's robbed us.
What does that feel like in hindsight?
Now, I want to punch him because he lied.
This is Debbie again.
And the mental anguish that my children has got to go through now. It's, you don't want to know what I think about it because I would say some really bad words.
Over the years, Gary and Debbie thought about telling Todd and Carrie they were donor conceived. They worried about what would happen if it came out. Debbie says the secret strained her relationship with Carrie.
It bothered me for years, especially looking at my daughter in her face and knowing that I know this and I'm basically telling you a lie, you know, really not, but I don't know. It's real hard to explain how you feel about it.
Now that she knows Klein used his own sperm, it's even harder to explain how she feels about it. Her kids are the product of an injustice, a deceptive act against her. But she doesn't love them any less because of that. She's torn between what she knows and how she feels.
I'm starting to get emotional because I love the kids, my kids so much. And they're mine. I don't care. I don't care if he fathered them, you know. And they're my kids. They're not his. I would do it again. Only because I got Todd and Carrie, you know. But I don't like how he did me. I feel like I've been betrayed, lied to, used as an experiment. You know, you might as well have had sex with me. That's the way I feel. You might as well have just raped me.
Since the news broke, everyone in the family has been reassessing their relationships. Carrie says she feels closer to her mother now that she knows about Klein. She can identify with her experience.
When I was 16 years old, I was violated at a party. I was raped. And to know that that she was violated in, it's a different way, but to me, it's in the same category. Because she did not give consent for his semen to be injected inside of her. And it's painful. It's very painful to know that my mom has been violated like that.
Outside the occasional holiday, Carrie and Todd didn't speak for years. But now Carrie hopes it will bring them closer together too. She also says she's glad she found out while her father is still alive.
I've had this opportunity to look him in the eyes and tell him, it's okay. Like, I love you, and it has not changed my love for you, and it's never going to change.
You can have 30-some years of love, I think, destroyed in a day.
For some other siblings, the news has been destructive.
in some weird way, Klein himself, at least for me personally, has almost been a non-factor.
This is Brandon. We're only using his first name because Brandon has a twin brother who wants to remain anonymous. Like Todd and Carrie, Brandon didn't find out he was donor-conceived or about Klein until he was in his 30s.
For Klein to do what he did, sure, you know, horrible, horrible thing, right? But this was my mother. And to just put it bluntly, I felt that she had lied to me for 35 years.
Brandon's father died when he was 16, and he says his relationship with his mother was already strained before the Klein news.
I've referred to this event, you know, this new information as the 2x4 that broke the camel's back.
Brandon's mother thought Klein used a mixed sperm sample, some from his father and some from an anonymous donor. That way they would never know who the biological father really was. The twin brothers turned out really differently, and Brandon says he never felt like he belonged in his family.
My brother and I were so different growing up that it became a family joke. And it was my dad that started it. You know, he started this joke that they were actually on the way home from the hospital with my brother when my mom was craving a Dr. Pepper. And so he pulled over at the 7-Eleven to go in. And when he got out of the car, he heard crying. And he went around the corner and found me in a dumpster. And they thought, well, we already have one baby. Let's just take a second one home. I think back to like the jokes about me being different. You know, all of these things slowly came together and formed this picture in my mind of feeling like I had been lied to. She had obviously had no idea about the Klein situation, but she knew that there was very likely a reason for why I was maybe different than my father, possibly different from my brother. The story I had told myself about who I was not entirely true. And my mother knew that and never shared that information with me. And had I not found out, probably never would have.
Since he learned the truth, Brandon and his mother have stopped speaking.
First off, I want to thank you all for coming today and continuing to listen to our story. You know, my involvement in this story has kind of been a little over 2.5 years now. It started a few years before that, and currently there doesn't seem to be an end in sight.
This is Matt White, one of the siblings, at a news conference at the Indiana State House in January 2019. About a year before, Klein had pleaded guilty to obstruction of justice. He's a felon now, but he served no jail time, paid a $500 fine. He went on to surrender his medical license, but he had retired 9 years earlier. To the mothers and siblings, those weren't real punishments for a man who spent years deceiving them, a doctor who, in their view, raped his patients. Some filed medical malpractice claims against him, but those cases could take years to resolve. In the meantime, they wanted to change Indiana law.
For Donald Klein, he likely will never be held criminally accountable for the decades he abused his, quote, power as a doctor. But today, we can move towards resolving the absence of criminal fertility fraud from Indiana law. Unfortunately, the actions of Klein's are not new. This is not a one-off. I assure you that no one can guarantee that another similar situation will not arise in the Hoosier State tomorrow, or the next day, or the day after that.
For years, Matt worked with his mom and other siblings like Jacoba Ballard and Heather Wook, pushing for a law to do just that, hold doctors criminally accountable if they use their own sperm. Matt's mother was also at the news conference.
Hello, good morning. My name is Liz White, and I've been a clinical social worker for over 42 years. Our goal here is not about revenge. It's to establish the egregious behavior that Klein did to be up forever against the law. It should never happen to anyone seeking medical service. Safety is truly our main goal. In the end, I deal with that I was raped, virtually raped, 15 times.
In 2019, Senate Bill 174 became law. From now on, a doctor in Indiana who uses his own sperm to impregnate a patient is committing a felony. A low-level felony, but a felony.
It's the bill that dealt with fertility fraud. It passed the House overwhelmingly, and I'd ask your support on the concurrence.
The motion to concur has passed. Secretary will inform the House of the passage of the motion to concur. Continue the roll.
Like, the bill passed.
Yeah. I mean,
it's a law.
Yeah. How does that feel?
You know, we work so hard.
Matt White and Heather Wook. They put tons of time into getting the bill passed.
You know, dozens and dozens of letters and phone calls and emails and just trying to call legislative assistants and
random
committees.
Pop-in visits at the State House.
It was just hours and hours and hours, and all of a sudden it was done.
Yeah. Surreal that it was done.
Yeah.
We were sitting next to each other with Matt's mom in the House for that final vote. And, you know, we know it's going to pass. But still, to see all of the green lights up on the screen saying that it's a unanimous vote to pass this bill and send it to the governor, we all, I think, had tears in our eyes and were giddy. And it was quite overwhelming.
Like, all your hard work has paid off, and all the tears are worth it. So if we can even help, you know, just a few families and protect people.
Jacoba Ballard says she and her siblings and the mothers, they aren't done yet. Indiana was the second state to criminalize fertility fraud. California was the first one back in the mid-90s. And now it's illegal in Texas, where it's defined as sexual assault. The siblings and mothers want that in Indiana, too, and elsewhere.
You're just going to keep pushing for
stuff. I want to keep pushing for it. Yeah. I want laws in every state. I want it on the state law, and I also want a federal law.
Hey, this is Jake.
And Lauren, thank you so much for listening to Sick.
It takes a lot of time and resources to make a podcast. If you've enjoyed listening, consider making a donation to WFYI.
Go to wfyi.org/give and be sure to mention Sick in the comments. That's wfyi.org/give. Thanks. Like Matt White said at that news conference, this is a story with no end in sight. The number of siblings keeps growing.
I met two new siblings the other day, and it was in the morning, and I was done for the rest of the day. Going through these conversations, it is so beyond mentally exhausting. I was just completely fried.
We wanted to know more about what life is like as a sibling today. What's it like when they hang out? So we asked Matt, Todd, and Heather to come talk to us about that.
The conversations that I've had with different siblings, there are some that we don't get into the weeds of it, if you will. You know, we keep it lighthearted and we just kind of talk about our kids, our families and life experiences, things we've done, our interests and hobbies.
Does it make it feel more like a family, the fact that when you get together, you don't talk about it? I mean, it's not like when I see my cousins at Thanksgiving, it's like, did you know our parents are siblings? Like, we don't talk about that. But you do talk about the dysfunction in your family when you're with your cousins at Thanksgiving, right? So I think it's kind of the same for us. Like, there's a bit of the, let's discuss this ridiculous dysfunction, but also let's goof around and do whatever. Let's joke around, let's eat, let's drink, let's play games, just the same as you would at Thanksgiving with your family. Our dysfunction just happens to be this one particular topic.
I mean, not to get into specifics, but like, it's not kumbaya among the group, right? Like,
right.
There are divisions and spats.
It's just life, I think. There's going to be
struggles and heartache with anything in life.
I almost feel like when those things happen, though, the forgiveness is faster and easier because we do know that we're all going through something that is quite traumatic. And I think we give each other a little bit more grace than you would naturally give the siblings you grow up with or your parents.
You know, everyone's going to have different opinions and different perspectives. I think it's kind of, it all boils down to just that we're all in this together, but, you know, that doesn't mean we necessarily need to agree with each other all the time.
Heather and Matt have had years to process their feelings about this situation. They're more familiar with each other and with the rest of the siblings. It's different for Todd. He's newer to the group. Technically, Matt and Heather are younger than Todd, but they end up acting like older siblings. They help Todd along as he feels things out.
Okay, we're put in a situation where, like, suddenly, like, ah, we're siblings. And it's like, you know, okay, well, you know, I'm 39 now. And, like, you know, where do I start? What do we talk about? I think I'm still struggling with that at times. Yeah, we share DNA. And, you know, are we supposed to just jive? Are we supposed to, you know?
I've never felt the conversations with you to be difficult. They've kind of just naturally, you know, just flow. Don't be too hard on yourself, you know. It'll come in due time. And
I think I get, you know, again,
or it won't. Exactly.
And I think that's, you know, that interplay of like, okay, so, you know, you have those expectations of like suddenly like, oh, we're, you know, siblings, and so, you know, there's those things that come along with that, and you know, playing with that. And it's weird navigating it, obviously. I mean,
here's your idiot's guide.
Right, you know. Right. Yeah. I know.
Matt and Todd have gotten close over the months since Todd found out he's a sibling.
We ran a 5K trail run together, and I was slow and beat. And
but you finished it.
I finished it. I did it. You know, I mean, it was rough. So just little things like that, you know, just to kind of camaraderie and kind of, you know, encouragement, and then just, you know, hang out and shoot the shit.
Do we mention the fantasy football?
The siblings bond over their shared trauma. You can even see it. Matt, Todd, and Heather each have a tattoo on their wrist, an asterisk, to represent the mark Klein would have drawn in their mother's medical charts. They've made it their own.
Before you guys go, can we get a photo of your forearms, the tattoos? Like
our tattoos?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are several people who have just gotten new ones, I think.
They're getting ready this weekend, yeah.
Yeah.
This whole story started years ago with Jacoba Ballard and her quest to find out if she had a brother or sister. She found more than 60.
Not that this is the way that you wanted it, but mm-hmm. Do you feel like you got the sisters that you were after?
I do. Obviously, like you said, it's not the way that I wanted it. The way that it came about has emotionally affected all of us. But with that happening, I have some really great sisters and brothers that I can turn to and call and cry or cuss, vent, whatever, that are there.
There's a sort of cycle to being a Klein sibling. It starts when DNA kits go on sale around holidays. They know that in the weeks after Mother's Day, Black Friday, or Christmas, they'll see new names, new siblings pop up.
When that happens, Jacoba and her new family are there. She even has a message ready to send.
That message that you send them is going to be forever changing their life. It's not exactly the same every time, but it's usually, I know that you have noticed that you have close relatives, let's say brother, sister, you know, if you would like to contact me either through here, here's my number. We can discuss this more and I can explain the story to you.
Sick is a production of WFYI, Side Effects Public Media, and PRX, with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
This episode was reported and written by Jake Harper and me, Lauren Davis. Additional research for this episode comes from Jody Madeira, a law professor at Indiana University in Bloomington. Our editors are Curtis Fox and Dave Rosenthal. Original music by Jordan Munson. Sound design by Storyyard.
Visit our website, sickpodcast.org, and find us on Facebook and Twitter at Sick Podcast. You can subscribe to Sick on every podcast platform, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you liked this episode, please rate us on Apple Podcasts or share it with a friend. It really helps. I'm Jake Harper.
And I'm Lauren Bavis. We'll be back with a new season of Sick and a new story next year. Thanks for listening.